On this episode of Mac Break Weekly, I, Sarah Lane, will be filling in for the vacationing Leo Laporte. I hope I'm okay, but I'm joined by Andy Anatko, Alex Lindsay, and Renee Ritchie. We're going to talk about the new iPad mini numbers and how we're supposed to interpret them. iPhone loyalty perhaps dropping. Is the force field down? And Apple's possibly breaking up with Intel for ARM. All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 324, recorded Tuesday, November 6th, 2012, Election Day. I cry with Johnny.
Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients anywhere. You could share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code MacBreak. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continual, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code MacBreak to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Hover.com. Hover is the reliable domain name registration and management service that's simple, honest, and easy to use. For exceptional customer support and 10% off your new domain name, go to Hover.com/MacBreak or use the offer code MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or other smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth at gazelle.com.
Hello, everybody. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Do not adjust your television screens. I am not Leo Laporte. I am Sarah Lane filling in for Leo Laporte because he is in Australia. He's about to, I don't think he's actually gotten on his cruise ship just yet, but he's going to be out for the next couple of weeks, so you're stuck with me, but not just me. Do not cry. I have the best Mac Break Weekly panel the world has ever known. Starting to my left, Andy Anatko, but not just Andy Anatko, it's Andy Anatko, the senior lead writer of the Chicago Sun-Times technology columns, emeritus extraordinaire, PhD. And to my right, we have Alex Lindsay, the senior lead, best Pixel Core person ever. And to Alex's right is Renee Ritchie, the editor, extreme ice cream loving person, emeritus, yay, of iMore at iMore.com. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, everybody. How's it going?
Electricity. Love it.
Isn't it the
I
best?
I can't get enough here.
Electricity is wonderful. It's just the best.
Now, this is like my first time in the studio in like a month. Between travel and the hurricane, I have not sat on a proper seat in a proper studio. It's quite nice.
Now, Andy, were you affected by the storm over on the East Coast at all with travel, as you're mentioning?
Not so bad. I happened to get home from North Dakota just 2 or 3 days before the storm hit, so that wasn't a problem. We lost power for like 4 days, which was a problem. But when you, again, we look at the video of what was happening in New Jersey and in Manhattan, it's like, okay, I can deal with 4 days of working in Dunkin' Donuts 10 miles away and throwing out like maybe at best $30 or $40 worth of frozen fruit. I'm no reason to complain.
Yeah. No, Renee, you're up in Montreal. Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, did you get any of the storm as it worked its way sort of northwest from the eastern seaboard?
No, it actually approached the wall that we have, sort of like Game of Thrones, and then it was turned away. It was either frozen or intimidated into making an abrupt left turn, and all we got was a little bit of rain, power out for a half an hour or so, and we were back up and frozen.
Well, I'm glad. And Alex, you were, at least during the storm time, you were out on the West Coast. I just saw you here. So I'm like, where's Alex now? I just saw him here. He works in the same building as me. But you weren't actually traveling during that time, right?
I was during the storm. I was actually flying over New York, looking down on it from Turkey. We were flying from Turkey to Los Angeles.
Wow.
Istanbul.
But you flew up and over
actually
it.
Interact with it.
Unaffected.
Yes, I missed it.
But you're not in Turkey now. You're in Texas.
I'm not. I'm in Texas. Turkey, Texas. There's turkey here, but there's no Turkish coffee. So no. So the I'm in Houston, Texas right now.
Well, thanks to everybody for joining me on this episode of Mac Break. Obviously, there's a lot of Mac news, but I figured we might as well start with the iPad mini news because people now have their iPads, at least those who pre-ordered in time or went and got them on the 2nd, which was last Friday. And I don't have mine because I ordered an LTE version, which I, you know, we can get to why I think that that's the way to go, but it's certainly not the way to go if I want to be excited and have my mini with me. But Brene, you're holding yours up. You've got a mini.
Yes. I ordered, like you, the cellular version, but then I went and stood in line and bought a Wi-Fi version to tide me over until it arrived.
You couldn't wait, could you? Well, we don't know when we're getting them. They say mid-November, but we're getting close to mid-November, and I don't even have any notice of when mine is shipping.
Yeah, there was originally dates put onto a lot of them, including mine, and then those dates sort of mysteriously disappeared a couple days later. But I have the excuse of having to review it in as timely a fashion as possible. At least that's what I tell myself when I look at the credit card bill.
And Andy, you've got one too. I mean, I guess you have the same pretty good excuse. You got to have it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm doing a two-parter. Unfortunately, I got a little bit carried away with the second part of the review. So instead of being up on Monday, as I hoped, it's going to be up like on Wednesday. But I mean, I couldn't be happy with them now that I have it. I mean, this ultra high definition, like almost magazine quality display. It's nice and compact. I can fit into tiny, tiny pockets. It costs $199. Oh, wait, no, this is the Google Nexus 7. How embarrassing for me. I'm sorry. Okay, but I also have an iPad mini. And I mean, the screen is not great, but it's not bad, and the price is $300. Sorry, bit of comedy there. So it's a very cool device. It's Apple like kind of gave us exactly what we asked for and not something else. We've been saying, wouldn't it be great if there was an iPad that was small enough that we didn't have to necessarily carry it inside a laptop case? Wouldn't it be great if there were an iPad that were a little less expensive and cost $500? And so Apple said, all right, we will take the iPad. We will scale it down to 80% of its size. We will sell it for $329. There you go. You should be happy now. Oh, I kind of thought that you'd like tweak it a little bit because this is a mini tablet. It's not a full size tablet. You changed. Nope. Again, you said you wanted a smaller iPad. So that's what we did. We took all the apps and we simply shrunk them down 80%. Yeah, but you didn't make the buttons bigger. Smaller iPad. You're welcome. The right word, consumers, is you're welcome.
Yeah, but I mean, you made a good point where you made the joke that it doesn't have a high def screen. And you said the screen isn't bad, but it isn't great. And that's not the sort of thing that Apple is known for. Apple's supposed to be just okay.
That's what really surprised me. It's a very linear, logical, here is what we did. We shrunk it down 80%. And it's not a bad device, but it's not an exciting device. I'm not sure that's necessary for every Apple device to be exciting, because even as is, a device this size for $329 that runs the library of apps that's available for the iPad is in itself a wonderful thing. It's just that it happens to live in a world in which $200 will give you a device that in many, they're two very different types of devices. It's not like you can easily get one or the other. It depends on what you're looking for. But for $130 less, you get a device that's a much better book reader. I mean, the display is much, much better. It has GPS built in, which means that you can preload your maps using the built-in map app and still use it for navigation as you go about. Whereas unless you pop for the LTE model, you're not getting GPS on this one either. So it's a complicated sort of decision tree to navigate. I really do think that on a fundamental level, the iPad mini is just as good as the Nexus 7. The Nexus 7 is just as good as the iPad mini. It depends on what you're buying it for. And that's really what it comes down to.
Renee, you've obviously had time to play with your the Wi-Fi only mini. Do you agree with Andy? Do you think it's sort of what we were expecting, but a little lackluster?
No, I don't agree with Andy on this rare occurrence. The iPad mini, there's a couple issues. One is that Apple is still bound by the laws of physics and economics, and you can't put a 2048 by 1536 display in a device that small. Otherwise, the iPad 3 and 4 would be that thin. You've got to light that panel, you've got to power that panel, and you've got to get a price point where you can afford to put that panel in. So we're probably 12 to 18 months away from having that device. So this was absolutely a compromise, but it was a compromise that Apple thought on total would be a good one. And for example, I took it to my mom's place on Friday because she's my barometer for normal people. And I think it's really important to remember that Apple has never made stuff for geeks. We kind of adopt Apple stuff and we use it and we wish it did certain geekier things, but Apple is a mainstream company. And she's had an iPad 2 going on a year and something. And for her, the screen was a huge improvement because it went from the iPad 2's 132 pixels per inch to the iPhone 3GS's 163 pixels per inch. So to her, you know, the text was clearer, crisper than ever. It was lighter, thinner. And instead of going for an iPad 3 before or an iPad 4 now, she is absolutely getting an iPad mini yet because the choices that Apple made with these products are the things that she values as a consumer.
Okay, but you're talking about someone who's already familiar with the iPad. They're already heavily invested in it. I do think that if you're already really big into Apple and very big at iPad, the advantages of sticking with that platform and being able to use all of your same apps is a very, very big win. I'm also not suggesting that Apple was required to put a 300 DPI display into the Mini. I think that was really never going to happen. But the problem is that we're talking about a consumer-level item that you're absolutely spot on, that people who are in here, coming into the store to buy a Mini tablet are not necessarily looking for a post-PC device. They're looking for a device for reading books. They're looking for a device for watching movies. They want access to apps, but they don't necessarily need a quarter million of them out there. And when you put the last part of my review talks about the differences between the iPad Mini and the Nexus 7 and the Kindle Fire HD, each of which excels at something that the other two do not. And we also have to talk about the Kindle Fire HD, because this is the device that when you launch it, it doesn't confront you with a patchwork of application icons that don't mean much to the average person. It says, here are the last three books you read. Behind that, here is the movie that you're watching. And then there, behind that, there's the website you were looking at. Tap this nice big kaleidoscope, tap this nice big carousel, and you will get exactly the content that you want in a very high definition display at a price point of $199. I did the same test that you did, putting these devices in front of people who are just, you know, who are not dumb people and not unsophisticated people. They're just not as interested in technology as we are. And they really tended to pick up and stay with the Kindle Fire a little bit longer than I expected them to. They recognized what the iPad is, but when it comes to I want to spend a not great amount of money on a device for getting access to my content, the Fire HD has a bunch of charms that are unique to the Fire HD. I don't think that the iPad Mini is a failure by any stretch of the imagination, but we remember a year ago when we started talking about this, we started talking about how, gosh, if Apple does this for $199, they will obliterate the competition. The competition will cease to exist. And if they sell it for $249, then maybe these other devices can find a niche for themselves. I think that there is enough distinction between the three of them. There are enough profiles that are unique to each one of them that they excel over the others. And there's enough price difference between $199 and $329 that it still is a completely wide open field.
Alex, you're obviously familiar with the argument that, hey, once you go Retina, you can't go back to something that's sort of like the iPad 2, but maybe a little bit smaller and therefore looks a little bit better.
I have to admit, you know, which is kind of odd because I'm really into resolution and, you know, we do all this production and everything else. But I have found both with my laptop and with my iPad, with the iPad 3, I've got a couple iPad 2s in my home office that I use for interfaces. And it doesn't really bother me. I have to admit that the Retina, you know, going Retina or not has not been a big issue for me. One way or the other. I mean, I think that it's fine. I haven't gotten the Mini. I'm very much looking forward to the Mini. And I think one of the things that is obviously to Apple's advantage is a certain buy-in that I think is occurring with people who have iPhones already. They're already used to the iOS. They're not that interested in learning how to use another operating system. So I think that the Mini can benefit a lot from those types of folks that, you know, don't need it to be as cheap as Android, but weren't ready to spend $600 or $500 on it. So I think there's some turnover there. I do think it makes it, again, easier for educational markets. I know for us, we were holding off for the Mac, for the Mini, for the iPad Mini to use to proliferate through kind of our bunch of our systems where we're using them for live streaming just to manage things, people staying in communication and everything else. And I was a little hesitant to spend $500 or $600 on every unit to do that because we have to buy a bunch of them. And 329 makes a lot more sense to me. So I think that those are the kind of decisions people are making to purchase those. I don't think that they're cleanly. Does this compete directly, dollar for dollar, pound for pound with the Nexus, which I think is great. I have a Nexus as well that I'm using. I don't have the Nook or the Kindle Fire, but I have. But in those comparisons, I think that you have people who have bought into the iPhone. You have companies that already are using iPads and just want to expand it. You have schools that I think are going to look at these. I still think that the iPad currently is probably the best solution from a tablet perspective for schools, primarily, I think, because of being able to lock them down more effectively than some of the other options. And I think that's important from a school administration perspective. Whether we think they should or not, I think that's a priority for them.
Yeah, I'm coming from the, I don't have any other competing tablet tablets because iOS and OS X really are my only operating systems that I'm using regularly. But I certainly am comparing the Mini to what I could get in the fourth gen iPad, for example. Fourth gen iPad looks just like my third gen iPad, just kind of faster. But the complaint that I hear from people, and it sort of came out of nowhere, is how heavy the iPad is. Oh, the iPad, it's not really very mobile, and it's so heavy, it's so hard to hold. It's like, nobody said that a month ago. All of a sudden, it's there are these horrible bricks that nobody wants to use anymore.
I will say that I use my iPhone a lot more than I use my iPad. So, I definitely find that, for instance, I love Flipboard, but I probably spend 90% of my time using Flipboard on my iPhone, standing in a line somewhere, where I do feel like the iPad's probably more bulky than I want to take out. And so I think that for me, I think there's a high probability that once my Mini actually shows up, I got the LTE as well, so I'm waiting, that I probably will end up using that more often than the iPad.
Yeah, that's actually one of the reasons I think LTE on the Mini, if it really is so much more portable and just kind of easy to throw into whatever small bag you might have laying around, then that's why LTE is key for me. But then again, I've always had an LTE iPad in general, and when I notice that people are worried about Wi-Fi in places that I don't even think about it, I think, oh gosh, I'm so glad. Well, I didn't always have LTE. I always had data connectivity. That's what I'm looking forward to. But yes, who knows when we'll get the LTE iPad minis that we ordered, hopefully sooner than later. But let's move on to who did buy the minis, at least the minis that are available now. Apple announced that it sold 3 million iPads in 3 days over opening weekend and clarified to those who said, well, wait a second. 3 million iPads across the entire line? No. Apple said no. Just the Wi-Fi only mini models that are now available as of Friday, and the fourth gen full size Retina iPad that was also available as of then. So this doesn't account for anybody who's already pre-ordered the LTE iPads, etc. But they didn't split out the numbers. They didn't say this is how many minis we sold and this is how many fourth gens we sold, which is obviously something that people are really curious about. Renee, do you think that's because the mini didn't sell that well, or what does this mean?
No, I mean, that was a really strange story that got covered. About a week ago, we saw that Google is almost selling 1 million Nexus 7s a month, and that got widespread, hallelujah, coverage. And then Apple announced 3 million iPad 4 and iPad mini Wi-Fi, and that was sort of, oh, they're hiding something, it's strange. But Apple's behavior is very consistent. They announce actual units sold to actual customers, not stuff that is shipping, that is wanted by carriers, that they imagine or one day wish that they will sell. And they were very clear which models it was. They very rarely break out, like they don't tell you which 11-inch MacBook Air versus 13-inch MacBook Air they sell, or which iPhone 4 versus iPhone 4S versus iPhone 5 they sell, except for the opening weekend when there's only one product. So we might at the next sales call get, a 50% mix of that was iPad mini, the way they do with the iPod Touch in the iPod line. But that's probably competitive information for them, and it's probably information that we won't get in fine granular detail at any time.
Anybody else think that it's Apple trying to hide numbers, or is this just the way that we're going to see numbers rolled out in the future? This is how many iPads we sold. It was a great quarter, that sort of thing.
They usually do end up breaking down some of that stuff in the future, but I think that they I don't know if we've ever had two different products being released at the same time. I think that's also it. And I you know, they're probably in a knee jerk. They want to be able to tell people what happened, but they also don't want to. They're trying to figure out how they want to spin it. I have a hard time believing that a majority of those would be iPad 4s. I mean, I think that it seems like the mini would be the obvious purchase, but maybe that's the problem. Maybe it was a whole lot of iPad 4s and not so many minis.
It was interesting on launch day, of course. Usually launch day starts at the Sydney store in Australia because it's sort of technically the first opening. Let's see how many people are at the store that'll set the tone for how the Apple riots will be in stores as the day moves on. And Reuters had a story that said, gosh, you know, there aren't really any people lined up at these stores. The Hong Kong store was kind of dead. There were more staff members than there were eager consumers. But then it seemed like conflicting reports, particularly coming out of New York City, which was a very strange day for an iPad mini launch day. People said, no, lines were around the block, and they're not too far from the lines around the block for people who are trying to get water.
It's interesting because, I mean, it was a strange launch. You didn't have the cellular versions available, which a lot of people want. So anybody who wanted those was not going to go line up. Also, pre-orders are increasingly taking away, as much as people say Apple likes the show and the crowds and the lineups, they're increasingly doing pre-orders. And more of the people that I know and people I used to line up with are now pre-ordering it. There were about 100 people at my local Apple store for the iPhone 5 launch. There were about 20 people for the iPad mini launch. And it was freezing cold, so I don't know if I'm ever going to line up in October for an Apple launch again. But I think just the nature of how Apple is handling their launches, and especially when you have a product coming out in stages, is not favorable for big lineups on launch day.
Andy, also, were you a line-upper?
I was not. I think it's been a long time since the release of a consumer product item is worth like camping out for. I mean, the early days, the first iPad, the first iPhone, even the second iPhone, it's fun to be in a line full of people who are excited enough about something that they would want to get in a line with it. But I would like to think that it's time to get rid of that metric as an indication of success or failure. I think I've been at Apple stores who are swanning in as a member of the press. And so I was camping out for 2 days beforehand and seeing just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who've been lined up there for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours to get their hands on this thing instead of waiting 2 weeks. And at that point, you know that there's your parents, like they just planted this thing inside the back of your head. And occasionally that part of your logic center goes to the forward side, but you can get it for without having to stand in line. And just like, if you're willing to wait a week, maybe a week and a half, you'll get it eventually. And you will not have had to like be unshaven and have a filthy smelling mouth at 8 a.m. in a suburban mall. And what is this hole in your life, son, that you think you're trying to fill with this iPhone? Wouldn't you rather fill it with, I don't know, joy of life, about goodness, about appreciation for one's fellow humans? Is that or you could
that yes, should be it, Samsung's next commercial, right?
Yeah.
You just, you're the guy who walks up to the guy in line and says, don't you want your life to be just fuller and more joyous? You don't have to do this.
It's like you can have that time of your life back. And you know, I'm sorry. I was about to put on the clerical collar and play my beloved Father Andy role. But yeah, I think it is a long time for us to realize that go to apple.com, place an order. When it arrives, you'll enjoy it and you'll find that you survived just fine.
You know, the last time I participated, pardon me, phone ringing. That's the car dealership. Apparently my car is drivable again. Yay. But hey. Won't that be nice? The last time I actually participated in a official launch was when the iPhone came to Verizon. And so at Twit, we thought, well, we probably should send Sarah down there. I went to the flagship store in downtown San Francisco, and we were covering it. We were covering it live, and nobody was there. There was nobody there. I mean, I was there first thing in the morning, yes, but there wasn't a line. I was one of three people in the store. It was totally weird. It was kind of a bust, actually. And we thought, I mean, is this indicative that people just don't care, that they don't hate AT&T enough? And that's not true. No, it just wasn't the sort of thing that people needed to go into an Apple store to do. Yeah, you switch over to Verizon if you need to.
And it's gone over the whole gamut, because for a while there was this situation where, you know, there were these huge lines and it was the only way you're going to get it. And then there were a couple where you would just show up at 9 o'clock at night the same day and all those lines were gone and there were plenty of phones. So you had this kind of situation where, you know, and I know I got out of the habit of it. And now I'm paying the price because I'm still waiting for my iPhone 5. So,
I would really love it if the Improv Everywhere group, like I just heard that there's going to be, and this is legitimately exciting. I was excited when I heard about this. Oreos, they're making gingerbread Oreos for the holiday season, and not every store has them. I think that Improv America should like get 400 people together who will do like an iPhone like product launch excitement. People lining up outside one store they will pick at random that they know is getting the gingerbread cookie, gingerbread version of Oreos. Just pick a random boring product like a new 8-outlet power strip. You're all excited about the 8-hour power. So there are 400 people. There's carts with coffee because they're all talking about I have the 7-hour potless strip. I can't believe that I waste my money on that. I can't believe we're finally getting an 8-outlet power strip. It does seem rather silly in the abstract, does it not?
Well, we've talked a lot about the Mini and the iPads and in general, just the iOS experience as opposed to other tablet experiences that are very good. And you also have the option of buying. Apple has dropped to 50.4% of the tablet market as of Q3, of course. And that's not a huge drop. I mean, they're certainly still extremely dominant, but a drop nonetheless. Samsung has shot up to 18.4%. Amazon, which introduced the Kindle Fire HD, the new one back in June, I guess it was, has shot up to 9%. So Amazon has got a ways to go, but definitely got a boost from the new Fire.
Those are shipping numbers, right? Not sold numbers.
Correct. Yes, those are shipping numbers. So we've talked a lot about this on TNT earlier in the week, Tech News Today, of course, the Daily Tech Show on Twitter. If you're not familiar with it, it's a really good show. And this looks pretty standard to me. This also doesn't take into account iPad Mini numbers, so the numbers are going to change a little bit. But it also doesn't mean that particularly Android tablets and a lot of the Windows tablets that may become extremely popular and we've got a holiday season to contend with aren't going to skew the numbers that much more. But what does everybody think? Andy, do you see the overall Apple numbers continuing to fall as Android takes a large chunk and Windows catches up?
That has to be the case, if only if you look at how the numbers are being put together. One of the reasons for Samsung's really big jump is that they're using the Galaxy Note and the Galaxy Note 2 and classifying them as tablets. And though they're kind of hybrid tablets, they're hybrid devices. You could classify it as a phone. You could classify it as a tablet, but okay, whatever. But now that so many Windows 8 devices are targeting tablets specifically, so many notebooks, their major manufacturer classic notebook form factors, but which can be converted into something that is very similar to a tablet. If they decide to log those in as tablets as well for the purposes of analysis, then you're going to see Apple's number declining. But that's just like phony baloney playing of the numbers. I do think that it represents a change in if it gives us some valuable information. It's that it's not true that the world was waiting specifically for the Apple iPad, that it is the great tablet. It is the great brand. It's the most recognizable brand. It has international sales reach and sales force. But I think the success of these other tablets is indicating that people are very, very, very much in favor of tablets in general. And so as more companies come out with more devices, we can get some more fine-grained information about what consumers are responding to. I'm really interested to see what kind of numbers we get once the first Microsoft releases numbers on sales of the Surface RT tablet. That are they? If you give a consumer a blind taste test, and unfortunately, I know that's impossible, but if you gave them a blind taste test between a $500 tablet that is optimized for tablet use or a $500 tablet that is runs a familiar operating system and is designed to be used with keyboards and mouses as well. It's more of a crossover device. Which one are they going to prefer? These are questions that I've been wondering about for the past 2 or 3 years. Again, the classic question, are they responding specifically to the Apple iPad? Did Apple design something that was exactly what people were wanting? Or is it such a success because it was the first device of its kind, and they executed that idea exceptionally well. Is it the idea or this articulation of the idea? And that's what we're going to find out in the next quarter, I think.
Renee, do you agree? Is it kind of like how the iPhone was the trailblazer, and now there are lots of other options for somebody who doesn't think the iPhone is exactly the phone that they need and want?
Yeah, I agree absolutely with Andy, and I think his assessment is spot on. I'm always careful when they're shipping numbers, though, because and I don't want to kick the BlackBerry playbook when it's beyond down, but they had large shipping numbers.
You got to dig pretty deep in order to kick it.
I got a shovel, and I'm digging as deep as I can. But
there it is.
They had huge shipping numbers, then they had huge sitting-on-shelf numbers and huge return numbers, and the overall share at the end of the day didn't shake out to very much. And Samsung gets a lot of orders, and they ship a lot of product, and they're not always as transparent as Apple is about actual number of devices put in a customer's hand. And the Galaxy Note, counting it as a tablet when it's sold on carriers, subsidized the way a phone is, again, it makes it really difficult to measure these things. But the Apple didn't really just make the iPad. They made the first mainstream computing appliance. It's the same thing with the Apple II and the Mac. This was just the next iteration of Apple democratizing technology. And they will all they are often first, but they are never alone in this. And now other companies, whether it's Amazon making a more media appliance or Microsoft making something that's in between the iPad and the MacBook Air, other companies will take their shots, and some of those shots will be successful, and they will find customers whose needs aren't served by the iPad, and that share will kind of solidify itself. So I think the iPad for the foreseeable future will maintain a majority share, but I think there will be a good battle for number two and then a more of a diversified ecosystem going forward.
Well, I think as we start to see it build up, I think we're also going to be looking at usage. So it's one thing for a lot of people to have the phones; it's another thing of how they're actually using them. And this makes a big difference for the app developer, for the ecosystem, because as Apple's market share drops, of course, the danger really is that you have more and more developers picking other things to develop for rather than iOS. And and that's, of course, what we grew up with as Mac users, is being that niche, and then got used to being in the majority. And we may actually be going back to a minority position. But the question really, again, most stats that we see right now are heavily driven into the usage is very, very high with iPhones, much higher than Android, because a lot of people are buying them as the other phone. They're not really, there's a lot of Android users that aren't putting anything on the phone. They're just using whatever it came with. It's just a bigger version of what they were already using before. And so I think that's also another piece to continue to watch. But I do think that Apple is missing an opportunity by not producing a lower cost one. I think most people who are buying tablets are still making that choice on cost. And I think that Apple not having a $249 version, I think that was where they really missed the mark.
Especially since they didn't go Retina, and a lot of folks said, if they go Retina, then it can justify something over $300, but they didn't.
No, I think that they didn't. They obviously decided to do what they do, which is hang on to their margins. And I think that this may be one of those points that people look back on, that Apple might have been better off taking a little bit less of a margin and being a little bit more aggressive about protecting their turf.
I don't know, really. Apple conflict.
I don't know, really. It's interesting. I don't have any inside information about Apple's long range business planning, but it is interesting in that I could easily see a business plan for the iPad Mini that goes like this. They know that as soon as they put a mini tablet out there, it's going to sell like gangbusters. They're going to sell through. They're going to have no problem moving product, which is not a reason to produce an inferior product, but it's a good reason to put something out on the market. If people want it and they want to pay for it, go ahead and let them buy it today, knowing that maybe a year from now, the cost of certain components is going to come down, and then they will be able to finally sell that Retina-grade iPad Mini for and keep the exact same price point. And then a year from, remember how excited we were when we went from regular iPads to Retina quality iPads. A lot of people that had devices that still certainly had another year or two worth of life in it, you know, they decide suddenly this is my backup, this is my beach iPad because I need the Retina display right now. So it's possible that they're really thinking of, they're thinking about a year in the future where that $329 price point will serve a lot of needs today. It will give them great margins for the first device. People are still going to be very, very happy with the original iPad because it gives people a mini tablet that they don't have yet, which is something with a real tablet infrastructure, a real tablet app store up there. And then a year from now, they will be able, there's enough bounce in the manufacturing cost that they can put a much better display, much better camera, much better this, much better that into it and still hold the line at $329. The Apple does not like to raise, they don't like selling things that are inexpensive, but they don't like to raise prices either. So this might be part of their game plan.
I think the one issue is that the danger is that right now a lot of people are making their decisions about tablets. We've gone from a tablet being a kind of a out there thing that only the techies are using to really the replacement for the average person's computing. I mean, you know, I think that that's, I mean, within the next 2 or 3 years. And so I think the problem is that window now is that there's a lot of people out there trying to figure out what they're going to get. And once they get it, I don't think that they're necessarily going to be buying something the next year. And I think that that's the, you know, and we can see a huge market shift over the next 18 months due to a lot of people making that decision, not just people, but corporations and educational organizations.
Renee, what your any last thoughts before we go to a break?
Yeah, so the Apple's always got these two sides of the coin. One is that they don't want to make the mistake they made with the Mac where they went for profit share instead of market share. And the other thing is they don't want to make crap like a netbook. And they say these things over and over again. And the way they've solved this traditionally and the way that I imagine they'll solve this now is that they're still tremendously supply constrained for the iPad mini. They will sell everyone they can make this year. So selling it cheaper will just compound that problem. But if they have a $329 iPad mini now, and then as Andy said, when the Retina one comes down, the original iPad mini drops $100, and you have the good iPad mini at the price they've established. You have last year's iPad mini, sort of like the iPad 2, at the budget discount tablet price, maybe, you know, $199, $249, whatever they pick that to be. And then Apple is once again, they're not leaving an umbrella, but they're not making crappy products. And I think that's the best of both worlds for them.
All right. Well, we've got some potential Mac news. Apple and Intel might be breaking up. They've been going steady for a long time. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, let's take a break. And to help us enjoy this break, I'm going to hand it over to Leo. Oh, Leo.
Hi. I hope you don't mind if I interrupt just for a moment on Mac Break Weekly, because I'd like to talk a little bit about one of my very favorite companies, Citrix, and one of my very favorite products from Citrix, GoToMeeting. Their tagline, meeting is believing. And actually, studies show that's actually true, believe it or not. We form bonds of trust with people based on visual cues, like whether they lean forward or backward, whether their arms folded or not. Well, there are only four key visual cues. It was an amazing study. I just read about it in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago. And that kind of made me think, boy, you know, this is why GoToMeeting is so cool. GoToMeeting with HD Faces not only lets you see the screen of the person you're meeting with, but also lets you see their face. And that means you can develop that trust, that link with somebody. It's really kind of amazing. If you've got a camera on your computer, on your iPad, you can actually share video and see each other in video conferencing. The quality is amazing. Really incredible. Let me just show you kind of how this would work. This is on the GoToMeeting site, GoToMeeting.com. It's a very good example of the HD Faces video. This is I've done a bunch of meetings with HD Faces now, and this is exactly what it looks like. What's cool about it? So you see the screen you're sharing, it shares the screen of all the attendees with pictures of everybody. Video. The person who's talking is highlighted. You can tell who's talking. You can share control. You can rearrange it, too, so that this, you know, the video can be bigger or smaller depending on whether you want to see it. It's very easy to set up a meeting, very easy to join a meeting. You can set up a meeting on a PC or a Mac. You can join a meeting on a PC, Mac, or iPhone or iPad or Android device. And if you've got an iPad, it'll even use the camera and the microphone on the iPad, which is awesome. HD video conferencing is now highly affordable. In fact, just $49 a month. But here's how you can use it for free. By the way, 30 days unlimited use. The apps on the iPhone and the iPad are free too. So this will cost you nothing. And I want you to try it on all of those. Visit gotomeeting.com. See the orange try it free button? That's what you're looking for. The offer code is MacBreak. All right. So where it says promo code, I should say. MACBREAK. That's case insensitive. Use that, though, so we get credit. Gotomeeting.com. Try it today. It is the best way to meet online, Mac or PC. That's what's nice, too. Your clients don't have to have any particular platform. Gotomeeting.com. The offer code is MacBreak. Now we take you back to MacBreak Weekly.
Thank you, Leo. Oh, we miss you already. Okay, before the break, I mentioned the story. This is coming out of Bloomberg. That Apple might be trying to see if it is feasible to move away from Intel chips in the Mac and switch over to an ARM architecture, which is, of course, something that Apple already uses in mobile products. Andy, obviously, this would be more power efficient, but how many years away are we from it being as powerful as an Intel-based Mac, which is, for power users, of the utmost importance?
Probably there are about two or all the reports I've read, and as soon as I was reading this, I was talking to some people who are smarter than me on most things, including chip architecture. They're saying that they think 2 years at the earliest, 3 years as a practical thing to go. There is a lot to like about this rumor in that obviously they've recently reorganized to put something as subtle as chip architecture and chip design into a czar level position at Apple. Like there was a top level guy who's very much invested in that. Also, there is so much that is hardwired deep into the roots of the operating system that is designed to sort of blur the lines between a mobile operating system and a desktop operating system. And here I'm not talking about things like multi-touch and, you know, nice animations. I'm talking about the way that the CPU deals with the battery, the way that it handles its data, the way that it moves information from one part of the electron of the CPU to the other. All of this is not necessarily optimized towards a low power mobile processor, but it's designed so that if they were to, you know, take out an Intel chip, put in an ARM architecture chip or something like that, it would go very, very smoothly. It wouldn't be an upheaval. It would just be a very, very natural transition. Still, this is not new information. I had a long conversation with an Intel designer, about 7 or 8 years ago, 8 years ago, 7 or 8 months ago, about the difference. He's a guy who was actually planning on developing more mobile-oriented CPUs, and he says that he was telling me that the differences in what you can do if you're designing a CPU specifically for mobile versus what you can do with a desktop-oriented chip are pretty huge. There's like a wall between those two functions. So if you're trying to make laptops and little desktops that are designed to cover what 80% of people are going to want to do, things like Microsoft Office, keeping up with the web, doing simple math, playing games, that is something that a mobile processor can handle. But it's the people who want to edit video. It's the people who want to do really good software development. It's the top 20% that you start to really, really get very, very thready. So overall, my take on it is that, I mean, they've got 2 or 3 years to work on this, I think. But it would be a shame if Apple decided that it's okay to get rid of the pro market and simply say we're going to address the 80% of the consumers that have 98% of the money and create a design that's optimized towards mobile, optimized towards thin design, optimized towards low power consumption. And if it means that there's a lot of tasks that a Mac can't do anymore, that's okay because we've decided that's not the sort of machine we need to build anymore. I think that would be a shame if that would happen.
I could definitely see it happening as a slow progression where you actually have it. Because I still am in the camp that believes that iOS and OS X are probably on a merger somewhere down the path. So I think they're going to end up as one operating system in 3 to 5 years. And so I think that as they look at those things, I could definitely see some of our Air laptops, which are not necessarily, you know, considered high performance machines. I mean, they're very fast now, but as the ARM picks up, you could definitely see those getting replaced, you know, by those chips. And I think a lot has changed, because I think one of the things is that you have, you know, before it was like everybody was using these trucks. Everyone was driving trucks, you know, and now this market has changed dramatically. And I think that it's kind of a brave new world in a lot of ways from chip design, where Intel isn't the obvious choice, the obvious advantage that it was when Apple chose to move to Intel. It is, you know, there's a lot of players there right now, including Apple. And I think that, you know, Apple has the money to invest in that development if they choose to. So I think that that's, and of course, I think Apple continues to like to own its own destiny. So I think that it owning its own chip manufacturing makes a lot of sense in that realm too.
Renee, I mean, what does this mean for Intel's model? Let's say Apple says, hey, we figured out what we're going to do. Our consumers they'll get used to it. We're going ARM only. Maybe there's a power drop, but there's certain power efficiency ramp up, and maybe they figure out how to do a little of both. What happens to Intel? Are they screwed?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. I think in some ways the story is being misreported as Apple is contemplating a switch to ARM architecture. Apple, and they said this when they switched from PowerPC to Intel, is that Apple likes options. And exactly what Alex said, Apple doesn't like their destiny to be held hostage by any one company. So if something happens with Intel, if Intel falls behind or they can't deliver the chips that Apple wants, Apple may have ARM ready to go as a backup. Or they might be, they just announced 64-bit ARM chips for the first time, and those are going to be on the roadmap now. And Apple is going to be well-positioned maybe to transfer part of their Mac business, like maybe an 11-inch MacBook Air or a 13-inch MacBook Air, is a good candidate for a 64-bit ARM chip, because the compromises in ARM make more sense there, where something like the, you know, the latest iMac, the 27-inch iMac, will stay on Intel because that's the better processor. Intel's never made a really mobile power efficient chip, and they've never really tried to make a super powerful ARM chip before, but both of those things are roadmap and architecture problems that someone like Bob Mansfield at Apple is really well positioned to solve. So I think this is Apple having simultaneous streams for their Mac computing platform, and I think it's something we'll see maybe a little bit on the more portable stuff in the future.
Yeah, there's some folks in the chat room saying, are Intel being screwed? Apple has a small percentage of Intel's total market, but that's, you know, it's a momentum shift, right? I mean, if Apple says we don't need Intel, then other companies say, well, maybe we don't either, if we don't have to sacrifice too much power for, you know,
and they buy a lot of one chip, which is huge for Intel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you've got, you know, the Windows market that's stagnating, and this is the sort of thing that I'm sure it matters very much to Intel which way Apple goes. But yeah, Renee, I agree with you. This is obviously not tomorrow, and this is Apple weighing some options. They've increased their R&D spending by $1 billion, in fact, just this year, because Apple has so much cash. I mean, what are they going
to
do?
Is that what it costs to keep Bob Mansfield at Apple? Do we have a number on that now?
Sure, that's part of it. All right, shall we move on to, what do you guys want to talk about? You want to talk iPhone? You want to talk about the fact that iPhone owner loyalty has declined for the first time? Nobody wants to stay with iPhones anymore. No, I'm kidding. Let's look and make sure I'm getting these numbers actually right before I throw out something that I'm going to regret.
A grenade in the room and you run quietly behind.
For the first time since the iPhone's inception, this is coming from Tom's Hardware, the percentage of the smartphone owners who say that they will definitely or probably buy another Apple handset has declined. This is research conducted by Strategy Analytics. Study found that 88% of U.S. iPhone owners are still likely to buy another Apple smartphone, but that's a decrease from 93% last year. If you compare that to Western Europeans, that totals around 75%, but also a decrease from 88%. So we're looking at 88% of iPhone users saying, yes, I strongly plan to buy another iPhone. 93% doesn't even sound like that's a real number. So it almost sounds like there are people being maybe a little bit more honest than they were a year ago. These numbers scare anybody?
confuse it's you? Better competition, right? I mean, like they used to not, yeah. The iPhone used to be a pretty singular entity, and now I could easily see an HTC One X or a Galaxy S3 or a Nexus 4. There's even the 920 is coming out now. There's a lot of really good phones, and I think people just have better choices on the market now.
Yeah. Also, we hate to, as Apple fans, people who love our iPhones, we hate to think that any part of the iPhone success is due to it being a trendy brand, the hot trendy brand. And I think that a lot, if there is any percentage of Apple's success that was based on the idea that people want something with an Apple logo on it, that the iPhone is the hot brand, the hot product that you want to have, you want to be seen carrying around. It's been around for a few years now, and people might have moved on to new hot brands and new hot designs. This was the summer in which, when I was testing the Samsung Galaxy S3, that someone said that at Chipotle, as they were assembling my burrito, said, "Oh my God, is that the new Samsung Galaxy S3? Like, oh my God, that's the coolest phone ever. That's my dream phone." And I was like, "Really?" I didn't want to insult someone who was preparing my food, but I was like, I would not have guessed 2 years ago that I would be confronted by someone who thought that the phone in my hand that is made by Samsung is the coolest phone ever. But yeah, it is about greater diversity. And it's also about a point that I think crosses different product lines, that people often talk about how Apple creates premium products. They don't want to create netbooks. They don't want to create crummy products that people are not going to be happy with a month after after they ship. And that's absolutely true. Unfortunately, I think that if there's going to be a problem for Apple moving forward, it's that they're also not particularly interested in building a Toyota. You know, a perfectly fine car, as a matter of fact, in many ways, a great car that a greater spectrum of people can afford. And also the people who could afford the $50,000 car. A lot of people just can't justify spending 50 grand on a car for what they use a car for. So in Europe, I think there is greater price flexibility that you can get Android phones that are a lot less expensive than the equivalent iPhones. I'd have to double check on that. But I think it's very, very telling that the one area in which Apple very, very quickly lost dominance of the market is the one area in which you can they have to compete price for price for price, where you can get substantially the same kind of phone for either exactly the same price or a little less expensive for the competing phone. And that's where they're starting to have struggles in getting dominance in a certain area. So Apple just needs to keep making, find a way to make a Toyota that people are going to like.
Alex, do you agree? Is it partly a little bit of bad press, some cracks in the armor that Apple's been experiencing this year?
I think that the distortion field is wearing off. I think that the center of that distortion field is gone, and we're starting to, you know, I do think that there's a certain coolness that emitted from Steve Jobs that doesn't, you know, there's kind of more of a matter of fact of this is a business and they're putting stuff out, and I really do think that there's a certain level of specialness that Steve brought to a lot of what Apple's doing, and I think that now people are looking at it just as the product, and there's less of that visceral connection that they had with Apple that they had before. And I think that and I also think that Apple is it's hard to figure out how do you do something revolutionary every single time. I mean, I'm getting an iPhone 5, but am I super excited about it? Not really. I mean, you know, it's got I'm interested in the LTE for the most part, and a little bit faster, but I kind of look at it as my job, you know, given that I'm on this show, and I've already feel like I've fallen behind because I'm on this show and I don't have a five. If it was my own, you know, like if I wasn't doing a show on it, would I get an iPhone 5? I don't know. You know, it would definitely be a little bit slower of a move. And so I think that Apple has to keep on doing something really stupendous or they're going to continue to slide into the mix of a lot of other things because, you know, Samsung and a lot of these other groups are spending, you know, they're producing great products. And so, I mean, it took them a little time to figure it all out, but, you know, that's going to continue to move forward. And Apple's going to either have to really push down hard, which is, I think we saw an increase in R&D, and one of the things I do think is going to be interesting is I think that Johnny Ive taking over the human interface could make a radical difference in how Mac products work and how they look and so on and so forth. And I think that might actually, I think he is he's still the person that people could get excited about at Apple. And I just haven't, you know, we haven't seen him. He doesn't seem to have any interest in stepping up to do that, but he seems like he would be a great person from that kind of idealistic, very focused, artist that I think part of us feel like we want to see at Apple, which we don't see right now.
What about the iPhone 5 coming to China? What about that Chinese market? They're two licenses in of the three that they need to sell the iPhone 5. And by all accounts, it looks like this will be cleared by the end of this year. The China's state radio management approved the A1429 version of the iPhone 5 that is compatible with China Unicom's 3G network. The second is the A1442, compatible with China Telecom's CDMA network. Now, China Unicom is number two carrier, I believe, and China Telecom is number three. Then we've got the Quality Certification Center that approved the device last week. And now Apple just needs a network access license, a lot of licenses that have to happen in China, from China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology. And then, you know, it's a free-for-all. Apple products are wildly popular in China, available.
They're wildly popular in China. They're wildly popular in a lot of parts of the world where you wouldn't. So where we have this kind of rush of all, like everything available, in a lot of places that I travel in the world, an iPhone is still very much a status symbol. Because they're harder to get, they're much more expensive compared to the average person's income. I know that in a lot of these other countries, I mean, it's still very much a status symbol. So I think that in China, I think it produced a very large percentage of Apple's income, as I think in the last quarter, I believe, I can't remember what the number was, but I thought it was like 15% or something like that, which is a lot given that it's just still a new market for them. So China's a big deal.
So force field still very much on in China.
We saw stage.
It's different and distinct. I think that that's the big thing in a lot of the, anywhere, that can be the case, but I think that we've kind of gotten used to them. Like everybody has an iPhone. Everybody has an iPhone in the United States. Whereas in other places where it's been hard and that has been a constricted supply, I think that it's still seen as something very special.
We saw that on stage at WWDC. Apple had both the OS X and the iOS event, had a featured section. One of the new tent poles, as they call them, for both operating systems was better support for China. And every conference call Apple has after an earnings report breaks down, how important, I believe it's their most important market after the U.S., ahead of both Brazil and Russia and other developing markets. And Apple is really, they're introducing new stores there. They're getting new products certified. They're selling iPads. They're selling iPhones. And Apple's international sales, I think sometimes don't see that in North America. For example, the Kindle Fire, we look at those results, and the Kindle Fire is sold in 6-7 countries. Apple's selling their devices in 90-plus countries, 100-plus for the iPhone now, and China is arguably the second most important one for them now.
Well, and we have to remember that, while we think of China as the average we think of the average Chinese worker working on iPhones and so on and so forth. We have to remember that there's a lot of people in China, and there is more people with the means to buy iPhones in China than there are in the United States. They may be a smaller percentage of the total population, but there's still an awful lot of them there.
All right. Before we move into some of our iOS news of the week, there's quite a bit of it. I think it's time to check back in with Leo, make sure he's okay, and let him talk for a couple of minutes. This is his show, after all.
Hey, guys, just if you don't mind, I'd like to step in and mention our friends at Carbonite.com, the show brought to you by Carbonite, the best backup solution, not just for Macs, but for everyone. Carbonite is exactly what you're looking for in backup, automatic, continuous, and off-site. Off-site because that hurricane that just went through the East Coast, man, it fire, flood, hurricane, earthquake, tornado, things happen that mean not only you lose your computer, but you could lose the backup if it's sitting right next to it. That's why offsite backup is a key part of your backup strategy. And Carbonite makes this really easy. Whenever you're online, it's automatically, continuously backing up your data. Once you get that initial backup done, whether it's 10, 20, 30 gigabytes, that's fine. You'll have that stuff in the Carbonite cloud, and then changes are backed up, and so incrementally, so it's very quick to keep up to date all the time. And anytime you want to check your data, see if it's there, download a copy of a file, use it, you can. You log on to your Carbonite account on any computer or your Mac, your iPad or your iPhone, and there's your stuff. Free apps available for you. I want you to try this free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card. Just use our offer code MACBREAK. If you decide to buy, you'll get 2 months free, 14 months for the price of 12. Offer code MACBREAK, carbonite.com. If you're in a small business, you might want to try the Carbonite for small business as well. Really great solution. Carbonite.com. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Back to you guys.
So iOS 6.0.1 became available. Easy for me to download. I don't know about y'all. Although it was kind of weird. It was like there was an iPhone 5 issue with downloading over the air because I kept saying, isn't it supposed to download by itself? And then I had to download a little app that was temporary, run that app so that my over-the-air update could work. But then it did. Did anybody else have the same issue?
It was all the iPhone 5s. It was an issue with iPhone 5 over-the-air updating. So you had to, they would give you a pop-up that says an update's available, and they would first give you the iPhone 5 updater. And when you ran that, it would then download that little app, put it on your springboard for a few seconds, and then launch the Wi-Fi, and then launch the proper iOS 6.0.1 update.
So this, by the way, is the advantage of not standing in line. Is this all sorted out? It's all working by the time I actually get my iPhone 5.
No, why?
Oh, it's going to come with 6.0, Alex. You're going to have to update afterwards.
I don't know the backstory. Why are you waiting to get the iPhone 5? Or what? Is it just, did you wait?
For some reason. I'm traveling. So here's the problem is I keep on going, I'm just going to go to an Apple store and buy one. And then they're never available. And I'm in a different city every time I wake up. So I
is it just backordered at this point?
It was backordered. And then I just want to be able to just walk into an Apple store. So I walk in and they never have the whatever, the 64 black, whatever that I want. And so I walk in occasionally when I'm in different cities and just see if they're there. And because I'm traveling so much, like the idea of having it sent back to my office or my house it's not very compelling because I'm not going to be there for a while. So I keep on thinking I'm going to get it. And then I don't. Here I am another day without another Mac break without my 5.
Oh, yeah. It must be tough. Keyboard glitches was one of the fixes that came to 6.0.1. I was experiencing those keyboard glitches. In fact, well, I can't replicate it, obviously, because it's fixed now. But it was something that happened. If I was, for example, searching for, I don't know, an app, you know, a Google type thing, once I would be able to type in the app I was looking for, okay. And then once I was getting to the point where I would either download or update that app, this is all App Store stuff. That's the only time that I noticed it. I'd get these funny little horizontal lines on my keyboard and they'd sort of be there for a second and then they'd go away, but didn't look good. And I started, at least for me, people on Twitter saying, are you noticing this? And saying, yeah, I am. Doesn't look very good. Some sort of processor issue. But apparently it's fixed by software because I haven't seen it in a while since then.
Yeah, iOS 6.0.1 fixed that. It was basically a bug fix release, as the 0.1s always are. And it fixed a bunch of issues that were annoying a bunch of people.
Speaking of bugs, we already have a preview of what's coming to iOS 6.1. And that's a big, fat bug report button coming to the Maps app. So it's easier than ever to say, hey, Maps, you sent me to the wrong place. This is terrible. I want to report this scenario. So can I just get this story out and then I'll be done with it? I am not an Apple Maps hater. I understand it's like I got to get used to it. I have other options. I have many other options, actually. And I download other Maps apps periodically and try them out and just kind of see where I am. But especially with the integration with Yelp, I end up using Apple Maps fairly often and I don't hate them. But I did have a situation the other day where something was wrong with my car because that's the story of my life. I get off the freeway. I'm on an exit. I don't know where I am. So I look up some auto body place. It's just like I want to go somewhere close by and get this looked at. And so I found something that had a fairly good rating on Yelp, got the turn-by-turn directions, and Apple Maps took me to a nearby high school that was nowhere near where I think I was needing to go. And I was sort of circling the parking lot, and I was in an infinite loop of Apple Maps just telling me to keep turning left. Make a U-turn, turn right, turn left. So they wanted me to go to the high school. So that was a specific situation where, everything's fine. I didn't die. But it was extremely inconvenient, and I was extremely upset. So
I think this bug report button is just going to be labeled, tell my wife I love her.
I'm in an infinite loop. Maps did it. So that'd be good. They're making it easier than ever to help them help us.
Yeah, I have to admit that I got taken down the wrong direction a couple times over the last week. And I at first I was like, how can Google keep on screwing this up? And I was like, oh, wait, it's not Google anymore. So, yeah, I haven't had that until in San Francisco or in the Bay Area. I didn't have any of that problem at all. But traveling, I have definitely found some areas where Apple's sending me to parking lots.
What do you guys think about the other 6.1 update of Siri being able to purchase movies for you with the help of Fandango, of course, but being able to say, Siri, buy me tickets for the 7:30 movie for two tonight.
That's interesting because Apple is doing that thing where it's brokering services now. So we had the ability to make restaurant reservations with OpenTable in iOS 6.0, and now they're adding movie tickets. And I think in different geographies, they'll just keep making partnership deals and we'll see more and more services getting added to Siri like that. Unfortunately, they're not going to fix maps in 6.1. That's going to take a massive amount of human effort. So that's probably be 7.0, but you will see movie tickets being available.
Andy, are you going to tell Siri to buy you a movie?
I want Siri to tell me, oh, no, Prometheus is not the movie you're hoping it to be. Here's a much better movie that's playing in Woburn instead. It's interesting in that the problem with Siri is that there is no user interface. And so users have to become aware that there are new things they can ask Siri to do and make that happen. If this gets rolled out and people just don't know that they can book table reservations, they can book tickets, then that feature almost may not even have to exist because people aren't going to actually be using it. But it is you see the huge upside to Apple. The more things that Apple can arrange for people to be able to buy through Apple services, the more important each of those registered credit cards they have attached to an iTunes account becomes, and the more valuable the whole ecosystem becomes. So it's not only a case, I think, of making things more valuable for the consumer, but also just giving Apple a little bit more strength and a little bit more control and a little bit more negotiating room with every new service that they want to bring into the Apple fold.
Well, and I think that a lot of times I know that I oftentimes want everything to be in I want to buy everything through iTunes just because I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about my credit card number. I mean, I do that. I have a tendency to do that with Amazon where I want to buy everything through Amazon that I can't buy through iTunes because I don't want to think about all that extra detail. They have all my information. You know, I know it'll show up tomorrow for $3.99 or free in 2 days or whatever. I don't, you know, I just want that ease of use. And I think that Apple being able to take advantage of that ease of use, I think is a big deal as long as my kids don't get to learn how to use Siri. So that otherwise I'll have to see Wreck-It Ralph, you know, every day for the next month.
I think Alex and Andy are actually highlighting one of the huge problems with Siri, which is Apple is not controlling the end-to-end experience with a lot of this stuff. And you see that with Passbook too. The actual Passbook app experience is fantastic, but often the apps that feed into it or come out of Passbook are barely more than web apps in app wrappers that need you to put PayPal details into tiny little web forms and otherwise make it miserable to get stuff into or out of Passbook. And with Siri, they offload to OpenTable, so you have to have an OpenTable account to complete your reservation. And you'll likely need a Fandango account or whatever their provider is in your country to use movie tickets. And this still doesn't address the fundamental problem of Siri not working that well. It's been given to Eddie Q now, but it's still quite often purple bubble, purple bubble, purple bubble, nothing, which frustrates users. And after a while, they stop using it. And you compare that to Google Now or even the new Google Search, where they're doing more localized voice detection and they're providing predictive results based on what they think you're going to do, so you don't have to wait for you to tell them all the time. And it just shows again that Apple with services isn't great and Apple with social isn't great and Apple with social services is too not great. And I think they're going to have to invest a lot of time and effort to catch up in that.
Google Voice Search is amazing. I mean, I've been playing around with that this week. It just speed alone, it is snappy, and it's the voice sounds so much better than Siri's. I mean,
it's
Siri
Google's
sounds,
forte.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, but I think that Apple does have to. I mean, I think that people oftentimes complain that Apple is very controlling over, you know, how they manage, you know, that you have to buy everything, you know, buying apps through the App Store and buying, you know, all the stuff through the iOS Store. But the reality is they just do it a lot better than everybody else. It's kind of, you know, I mean, it really is a better solution. True. I mean, if an app costs less than $100 and it's not on the App Store, the chances of me buying it is very low. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I understand production apps, but like for little apps, I'm just kind of like, I'd rather buy something like it on the App Store so I don't have to deal with installation again.
I wish Passbook would all work with iTunes. Like, if you could just use iTunes to pay for everything in Passbook, or you could just use iTunes to pay for anything that I buy from my phone, it would be a much better experience for me. I understand companies are loath to give Apple the keys to that kingdom, but it would be so much better.
I still think Apple should just, you know, create their own bank. Just think how much they would save on transaction fees. I mean, when you think about that, they got everybody's credit card numbers, that they just built their own bank, and then you know, it would, anyway.
That'd be great, because then you could buy like new iPhones on a subscription service. Where the second that Schiller says, and it's available today, beep, hi, we've just charged your credit card $299 for the 64-gigabyte black model. You're welcome.
Your Apple credit card, which would be available more exclusively than the Optimum card. It would be fantastic.
So how many of us have ever bought an emoji app for more than free? Like, anybody
Guilty.
Here bought a 99-cent emoji app at any point in time? No?
Guilty as charged. Yeah, no, I have.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes two of us anyway. Andy and Alex say, no, why would we do that sort of thing? So
the very first one was like $1 or $2, wasn't it, when it first came out?
I've always seen more than one. I think there was some app called Emoji Free where I went, oh, cool, this is a great emoji app. And then there was an Emoji Pro. So I'll just go get that one because that one's better somehow. Of course, the story now is that emoji apps may not be long for this world, or at least the App Store world, since native iOS 6 supports emoji more than ever before. Of course, emoji is something that's just built in as an international keyboard. You can toggle it on or off. But if you have it on, you're one of those annoying people who now text this way. I am one of them. Many of my friends are, but I also have other friends who think it is just the stupidest thing in the world, speaking of trends and wanting it to go away. But developers told Mac Rumors, I think the story is from about last Friday, we're getting notices from Apple saying that our apps have been pulled from the App Store. The verbiage is, for the most part, that this is a part of the App Store review guidelines, that since emoji is part of iOS 6, it makes sense that your app is not really all that useful anymore. It's really just replicating something that Apple's already doing, and it's not really giving any entertainment value that Apple doesn't already give as part of native iOS. Now, some of those developers said, well, the apps are still there. So are they coming down? In some cases, they already have. In other cases, it sort of remains to be seen. But if you search for emoji in the App Store, you get a lot of emoji apps. You also get a lot of apps that aren't necessarily emoji apps, but have that word somewhere in their developer notes. So I think that they're getting flagged too. I'd be pretty upset if I was a developer who's like, I'm not really even an emoji app. This sucks. Yeah. But then
I was
again,
trying to game
Apple,
the system,
right?
Innocently enough, and now I'm getting caught in my own, you know, hoisted by my own petard. It's completely not. Yeah, you know, that's interesting because it's one of those things where I think Apple doesn't have to do it, but they. Of all the spam that they could clean out of the App Store, and there is still tons of spam, they're wasting their time with the emoji icons. And then I lose a game of letterpress to one of my writers, Georgia, and she sends me an emoji, and then the screenshot blown up of that emoji, and then the screenshot of that blown up again until all you see is those horrible, hateful eyes. And I kind of wish they would ban all emoji.
But it's such a good way of expressing yourself. Whether or not we think emoji's a great thing, I mean, Andy, is it good riddance for a bunch of crappy emoji apps that are littering the App Store and some that shouldn't be charging a dime?
Yeah, I mean, well, let's state right up at the top that nobody can ever be really, really thrilled by the idea that a piece of software that used to be available, that used to be perfectly okay according to Apple, is now verboten, it's being removed, and now you can't have it. That's exactly the sort of ungood news that people thought was going to happen when Apple said that we're going to be controlling the App Store totally for delivery of apps on the iPhone. On the other hand, this is exactly what that kind of policy was meant to do well. Wouldn't you feel horrible if you knew that, oh, I just spent $1.99 on this emoji app when I didn't actually need it? This is actually built right into the operating system. Why didn't Apple tell me that? Why did Apple try to get the... is Apple so keen to get 30% of that sale that they're willing to sell to me all the features that are built into my phone anyway? What is this? But also, Renee is absolutely right. There's just so much spam in these things. When you try to look It's a horrible, horrible ordeal when you try to find a worthy app based on a logical keyword about what it does. Because if you look for word processor, you're going to find maybe the five really good word processors that are available for the iPad. But you're also going to find a million stupid apps that are just, you know, people who just bought one of the Big Nerd Ranch books and decided to write a text editor and charge $5 for it. Or people who decided that, well, people, a lot of the top three paid apps in this category are word processors. If we say that, if we want to sell one of our ebooks, we want to sell one of our games, we'll just put the word processor in it to try to taint the search results. So, I mean, Apple could create its own $100 million company that does nothing but curate and weed out all of these apps that are either pointless, useless, deliver no value, or at least are not going to be, are going to make it more difficult for a user to find the apps they actually want.
But where is the line, Andy? Where is the line?
As God's chosen emissary on this plane, I define where that line is. Pray that I do not move that line further.
It's like, you know, Apple runs a boutique, not a flea market. And if they used to sell bottled water and now they're giving you away water for free, they'll remove the bottled water from their selection and the bottled water company will lose a source of distribution. But, you know, there's plenty of room for them on the Android market, so we don't have to weep for all of them.
Well, we've got two conflicting stories. Speaking of the App Store and what could be approved or yanked, The Guardian writes, we've got sources from within Google who do not think that this Maps app that we're working on diligently and we're going to be ready with by possibly the end of the year is going to be approved in the App Store. Now, causes a chain reaction of people saying, how could Apple do this? It's so selfish. It's the users who lose.
It's just that easy.
Right.
Just put out this very, very, if you want to create a storm, if you want to make sure that, like, you feel as though, I think that likely Obama voters are people who get upset about controversy in the App Store. Let's put out a half of a sentence about, we don't know if they're going to release our Google Maps app. And then just have people stay home and write angry diatribes about how the world works. Works great.
Given the negative reaction Apple got for not, you know, when Google Voice was pocket vetoed, it was just left on a shelf and never approved. There were rumors of government investigations. There was a tremendous amount of pressure put on Apple, on carriers, on everybody. Apple took their sweet time with Google Search, but they approved it. I don't think there is any situation where Apple could not approve a legitimate Google Maps app. So I think this kind of story is just, it's baiting the headline.
Yeah, CNET had a good rebuttal saying, engineers worried that Apple isn't going to approve an app is just what happens. That's what you do as a developer. You hope that not only are you approved, but then you don't get yanked at a later time when Apple slightly changes their terms of services.
Yeah.
This is Apple anyway.
You do. I think that at this point, we really do have to set aside the idea of Apple canning apps for strictly political or strictly corporate strategy reasons, because they've now had a long track record of approving and disapproving apps, and nobody has been able to demonstrate a real track record of Apple ever binning an app exactly for that reason. Sometimes those reasons make absolutely no sense. Sometimes they're needlessly drawn out and frustrating and opaque to developers. But I don't think that anybody can make a case that that's a documentable problem with the app's approval process. So I just to wrap it up that I don't think that if Google filed a Maps app that conformed to guidelines, I think Apple might drag their feet a little bit about it just to make sure that they're not, that this is an okay app, but I don't think anything would prevent them from blocking it. Anything would prevent them from approving it for a sale in the App Store.
Part of me does think, though, that someone has a nephew that works in the App Store, and it's sort of like Will Ferrell in Elf dancing on the table where he approves Tether apps willy-nilly that get yanked later, and he approves the Pokemon app that's only a screensaver but costs $5 and then keeps Google Search in the shelf for, you know, 2-3 months. Because there's absolutely no rhyme or reason to some of the stuff that they approve or disapprove and the reversals that happen later. But exactly like Andy said, for the high-profile stuff, Apple has very little leeway.
All right, before we get into some of our, we've got some apologies. We've got some miscellaneous news. Andy, I know you're really looking forward to some of the legal stuff on the part of Apple.
Time to change my pants. I think I just ruined the pair I'm wearing right now.
Told you, he's really excited. It's so cute. Let's kick it over to Leo, the third of four times during the show. Leo, who are we thanking?
Thank you, guys. Mac Break Weekly brought to you today by Hover.com. Domain name registration and management that's simple, that's clean, that's pure, that's honest. This is what you're looking for. You don't need a lot of upsell. You don't need a lot of sexy girls in the ads. You just need to register a domain at an affordable price to not have to click 100 times just to buy the domain. Hover's so great. They find their inspiration. I've talked with Elliot Noss, their CEO. He says we get our inspiration from Apple, the clean aesthetic, the simple, powerful management. We really are trying to make something that good, something that you go, wow, this is exactly right. This is elegant. This is easy. They don't believe in heavy-handed upselling or cross-selling. In fact, you know, those other guys, they will, you know, before you're allowed to buy a domain, they'll try to sell you a bunch of stuff, including domain name privacy, right? That's a good thing. You don't want anybody to have your address or your phone number. Hover just bundles that in. It's part of the deal because they know that you would want that. Who has privacy, subdomains, URL forwarding, all included in the price. They only partner with companies they think are offering great value. You're not a lot of upsell. They have all the main TLDs, .com, .net, .org, as well as .tv, .pro, .mobi, .biz, even some popular country code TLDs like .ca, .asia, .us, and .uk. Hover is brought to you by Two Cows. These guys have been doing this for a long, long time. They know customer service. They know customer support. Call 866-731-6556. 866-731-6556. You will get Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. You will get an expert who will solve your problem, who will not put you on hold. You could just go to hover.com. You don't even have to call them. But I do like the idea of if you have domains registered elsewhere, their domain transfer service, their concierge service is great. Call that number to initiate that. Then you don't have to do all that. It's so annoying to transfer domain names. They'll do it for you. Hover.com. Now, when you use the offer code MACBREAK, you'll get 10% off your new domain name, or visit hover.com/MACBREAK. Hover.com/MacBreak. Simplified, elegant domain name management and server management from Hover. Hover.com. Use the offer code MacBreak.
Hey, thanks, Leo. We're back with MacBreak Weekly. Andy Anutko, Alex Lindsay, and Renee Ritchie are joining me nicely since Leo Laporte is on vacation this week and next, by the way. So I mentioned that we were going to talk about some, retractions, I guess, some rewriting orders. This is a story from last Thursday. This is kind of hysterical, actually. Apple had been forced to make it clear that Samsung did not infringe on Apple's iPad register design in the UK. So Apple went ahead and wrote an apology. And Samsung said, you know, that's not the apology that the court said that Apple had to write. Apparently, Samsung complained, well, no, Apple mentioned other comments about other rulings in Germany, in the U.S., and that sort of made it seem like, well, Apple's sort of right, even though we're being forced to publish this apology. And that's inaccurate, and that's misleading. And a judge agreed and told Apple, you know what, you got to rewrite this and you got to put something up in the next 48 hours. And it has to be a certain font size so that, you know, and you can't make it in white on a white background. There are all these things like, Apple, you got to do this the right way. a lawyer representing Apple said, well, wait a second. We thought we were complying. We're not supposed to be punished here. We're not supposed to be groveling. We're supposed to dispel commercial uncertainty, and then said, and we need more time than these 48 hours. We need more like 14 days to figure out the right replacement. And judge said, no, you can't have that. Can't have we're that at using, all. We're rewrite the damn thing.
The guy who has the password to our WordPress is on vacation. We can't change the website for another week or two. It's just like having a 4-year-old. It's like, did you brush your teeth? Yes, I did. Okay. Did you stand in front of the mirror? Did you put toothpaste on the toothbrush? Did you rub the toothbrush with the toothpaste around your teeth up and down for at least 30 to 45 minutes, 30 to 45 seconds? It's like, oh God. I mean, so the judge gave him such a simple and direct order. They decided to do it in a flippant way. And then they're like, what? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Is this bugging you? I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. Why is this bugging you? I'm not touching it. You said not to touch you, but I'm not touching you. It's like, oh, for God's sakes, how mature are you, Apple? Yikes.
Well, I have to admit that I think that Apple returned an immature ruling with an immature action. I mean, the thing is this whole, like, you have to file whatever in public. I mean, that's something, I don't know. It was just, when I saw the ruling in the first place, I was like, really? Really?
It wasn't
like, how idiotic is this?
It was inviting naughty behavior, I admit.
It was an idiotic ruling. It was idiotic. It was idiotic.
it was not cool enough to get mistaken for an iPad.
If they did something wrong, fine them. You know, if they broke the law, put them in jail. But having them print little things in there is just stupid. You know, so of course Apple did, you know, they did something stupid with it. It was just a stupid ruling. You know, so I'm sorry. I just was like, watching this go, I was like, you know, it's that whole, like, we're going to, I don't know. This judge is thinking that they're bigger than they are, or proving that they are as big as they think they are, or whatever. But there's more of a control thing of a judge being stupidly creative rather than just following the law.
I think they published the judge's comments, too, when he said that the Galaxy Tab wasn't cool enough to be mistaken for an iPad. So Apple made sure to include that in the original text. Yeah, I agree with both of them. It was a silly ruling. It was a silly response. And now Apple has way below the fold on apple.com/UK, a more linear, more court-approved apology. And I do think Denny Crane is absolutely their lawyer guiding all this.
Yeah, there's a nice little updated apology. It's not really an apology again, but just let's clarify, as ordered by the judge that ran in the Guardian in 14-point Arial font. That's very important.
Had to be Arial, no Helvetica for them.
No. We want Arial. We just want people to read it. We don't want to think about design too much. Make it big. Make it nice and black on newspaper font. So yeah, it's what we got there. I'd read it, but we all know what it says. It's basically what they said earlier without the ha-ha flippant stuff. Oh, Apple and Samsung, will they ever get along?
Well, you just have sex with each other and get it over with. We're just sick and tired of watching this. I mean, just end the dance already.
I know I am sick and tired of it. We talk about Apple and Samsung patent stuff on Twit way too much. Come on. Make it more fun for us to cover you guys. Anybody excited about the official third-party Lightning accessories from Belkin?
Ooh.
No?
No, it seems very excited about that. It's a car charger?
Yeah, we've got two. So there's a... Let me make sure. Yeah, so there's a car charger and then a charge plus a sync dock.
Both are faster than Thunderbolt.
Yeah. You know, I've got a little Belkin... iPhone stand right now that I like a lot.
The interesting thing with this is that Apple is much more tightly controlling Lightning connectors than they ever did the 30-pin dock connectors. And they also have this under incredible NDA. Like, if you think the iOS NDA is harsh, the dock connector, Lightning connector NDA is 100 times more strict. But it sounds like small batch stuff will no longer be permitted. You'll have to go to an approved Apple manufacturer to get the stuff made. So it'll probably be the big companies with the most mainstream accessories. And then we'll see the smaller, more niche stuff like scientific instruments switch to either Bluetooth or 3.5 millimeter headset jack like Square uses. So it'll be a more interesting accessory ecosystem, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's funny. Martin Avila, who's the general manager at Belkin's core division, says people are eager for Lightning accessories, and Belkin's give them a reliable way to keep their new iPhone 5 or iPad 4th gen, iPad mini, iPod Touch charged, protected, and ready to go. I am not sitting around finding myself eager for new Lightning accessories. I'm more eager for accessories that are compatible with my headphone jack that is on the bottom of my iPhone. I find that to be more of an issue.
Do you use a dock, Sarah? It's a big split in the Apple community whether you use a dock or you don't use a dock.
I don't use a dock.
I don't use a dock either.
No.
I almost never use a dock. I mean, I have one. The dock that I use the most often is at hotels. They have the little clock with the little dock on it next to your bed. And I find now that I measure hotels, like if they don't have it, I'm a little perturbed that I now have to find my
well,
my
you
cable.
Realize, though, when you get your iPhone 5, it'll be basically like none of them have it again. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I've got an alarm clock with a dock as well, because it's one of those alarm clocks that's supposed to measure my sleeping patterns. So it's like, okay, the iPhone doesn't fit anymore. I'll just use the iPad 3. So that's what I do now. I figure it's bigger, so it's probably monitoring me better. I don't lightning accessories. It's bound to happen. I guess kudos to Belkin for being first. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is the exciting opportunity to replace all of the cables, adapters, and power accessories that were working just fine for their old phone with things that we have to buy now because we decided to go buy the new iPhone 5. Oh well.
Not that you're bitter.
Not that I'm bitter. Well, okay, I'm a little bit bitter. Okay, I'm a seething ball of bitterness. I am the everlasting gobstopper of lemonhead.
Ball of bitterness. It's awesome. I just got the car charger, stuck the lightning cable in instead of the 30-pin dock connector cable, and I was fine.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had gotten a tip on in one of our inboxes on another show from somebody who said, during the hurricane, during Sandy, I was totally out of power, but I did have a Mophie case for my iPhone. Of course, there is no Mophie case for the iPhone 5, but if you've got that 30-pin adapter, you plug that into the bottom of the Mophie. You plug the iPhone 5 into the rest of it. Top won't work, but who cares? Because all you want is power, right? Works like a charm. I tried it out. She was right. So I like the whole hack thing until Mophie iPhone 5 cases come out, the iPhone cases that can actually be on top of the iPhone rather than being a separate little unit, which will be sooner than later. But all right. Should we move on to what is it? Okay. So how many of us use Path? In this group.
I use it.
Alex, I think I had to stop being your friend because I came to 150 friends and you never used it.
I stopped using it.
Yeah. That's probably why.
So for a while I got into Path and I was like very interested in Path. And then what's interesting about it was because it was so closed that I started really posting a lot of pictures of my kids and cool things. And then I just decided that was not a thing that I should be doing. Like, I just made this decision, like, I shouldn't be that personal about anything. And it was just, I don't know what it was. And so I just decided to stop doing that. I didn't like to get into the pattern of being public, even in a private space. So that's why I stopped using Path.
Andy?
And then I got...
Yeah. Are you into Path?
I love it. I think it's one of the coolest designed iOS apps I've ever seen. I mean, the user interface elements they've built for this are just Apple. Please either buy these people out or steal it, or discover they haven't patented these ideas and then steal them for iOS 7 because they're such nice ideas. But I'm sort of with what I love the idea behind Path, which is that there should be a really, really personal and private social network that you can maintain that's just for a limited number of people. And I love it. Unfortunately, I was unable to convince the majority of the people that I do want to share personal photos with to actually use it. And so I still use it occasionally, and sometimes I'll do it to like my friends at Twit, my friends at and that's kind of that kind of circle. But unfortunately, if I want my sisters to get that little warm fuzzy feeling knowing that, you know, the Happy Halloween poster that my dad bought 18 years ago that I took from the house, like when they closed the house, well, here it is hanging on the door, isn't that lovely, I have to go to Facebook to post that photo to them because that's the only thing that they will use. I know. I don't like it, but sometimes if you want to maintain relationships with your relatives, you have to actually do things you don't like, such as post a photo to Facebook.
When you got to get through the holidays, you can't use Path. Renee, what about you?
I use Path only whenever there's an update out and I have to write about it, but I'm sort of like... I barely use Facebook. I'm trying to force myself to use app.net, but I find Twitter is the perfect time commitment for me because I can quickly post something, quickly reply to something, and get out. I find all like Google+, Path, Facebook, there's just too much time demand, and they're great buffers. My family can think that they're keeping in touch with me. I don't have to actually speak to them on the phone, but I just don't use them that much.
Well, the reason I bring up Path is because they just rolled out an official iPad version, the iOS and Android versions, and BlackBerry? I'm not sure. Maybe? Versions have been out for a while, but there was no iPad version. So if you wanted to run it on an iPad, you had to run it at 2x, which was not that big a deal. Ooh, you bringing me an iPad? Oh, thanks. Great. Okay, so this is Chad's Path. I hope all of your friends don't mind that I'm showing them off. But we've got cute cats and stuff. So on this view, ooh, gosh, I'm doing this backwards. You've got your left hand rail, which anyone who's used the iPhone, the regular app is familiar with. Of course, on my iPhone, this expands and contracts. Then you've got, oh, there's me. I voted this morning. That was a picture that I took. I'll go ahead and be Chad and smile at that because, you know, it was a pretty cool update. So this all works pretty normally, right? It's a little irksome, I think, to me, you know, just to be nitpicky about design, that I would like the pictures, the feed itself to be full screen and be able to hide all of my activity on the left-hand side.
Panel.
Yeah, exactly. It just, you know, I would like that, but whatever. It's not a huge deal. But then if I go into landscape mode, this is where it's supposed to be kind of new and cool, right? This is Path, the iPad-enabled version. So if someone checks in somewhere now, I see a map view of it. This was my photo from this morning. If I go ahead and click it, then you see what I said about it and where I was and who liked it and that sort of thing. But it's all sort of photo-based. It doesn't look anything like Path. And Andy, you mentioned, oh, Path is such a beautiful design, and I agree with you, but I feel like this view is very weird. Why are some of these images so tiny when the map one is so big? It's kind of all over the place. And if I want to see, hey, what did somebody, you know, who's the latest person that maybe liked my voting picture? There's no way I can get there. I can't bring back that. I have to go back into portrait mode. I hate iPad apps that don't work the same way in landscape and portrait. I understand if they are designed to work one way or the other, but when they're specifically designed different ways, depending on how you're holding it, I hate that.
It makes Johnny Ive cry.
Well, I am with him. I cry with Johnny.
I think Andy was right when he said that they're doing a lot of innovative interface things, and you can see Apple starting to steal a little bit of that. For example, in the Yelp section of the Maps app, you have a little bit of the stretchy image parallax effect when you get photos of restaurants or photos of locations. But I absolutely agree with you. The navigation in the iPad app is non-obvious when you're in landscape view, and it's not clear to me what they want you to look at or why. Hopefully they'll make the portrait view the default one in both.
I hope so, too. Maybe if I complain enough, I can get the Path people to pay more attention. This was a really cool headline, at least. London to deploy 14,000 iPad-controlled smart streetlights over the next 4 years. It's like, wow, this is the future. It's not as exciting as it sounds. The details are that London's planning to upgrade the street lighting system in Westminster over the next 4 years and has committed to spending £3.25 million to replace 14,000 lights with new energy efficient versions, but that the lights will be controlled through iPad apps that workers will have access to. So they're actually smart street lights. So I'm holding my little iPad mini probably if I'm a worker, because you know how extremely heavy and lunky those regular iPads are. I can see if something needs my assistance.
Well, the thing the problem is that it still involves a cockney type character in a long scarf and a stove type hat climbing a ladder to the top of the street pillar and just tapping the iPad to it, because there's some traditions that really shouldn't die.
These are the sorts of stories that are
his
written up.
His face all sooty with candle black.
Right. These stories, you see them written the little up flower all the time. Girl.
I hope she has a good night. If she has a good night selling her flowers, she might be able to afford a lump of coal and not die in the parish in the evening. That sort of stuff.
I don't know. These you see these headlines all the time where it's like, iPads will revolutionize the lighting grid. And then you read it like, what are they going to do over in Westminster? Oh, they just have like an iPad app that's running a program that's somehow tied into
They're
that
opening
grid.
Up a website that
Right, exactly.
Because we all know only a device like the iPad running an operating system like iOS could control a light.
Magical and revolutionary as Gordon Ramsay blows by in his Lamborghini at 100 miles an hour.
Exactly.
They asked me, we were getting a new refrigerator for the office, and they said, what are your requirements? I'm like, I have to be able to run it with my iPhone. So far, we haven't gotten a new refrigerator yet.
Samsung compatible.
Here is the power switch. You can, if you whack it upwards with your iPhone, it turns off. If you whack it downwards with your iPhone in your hand, then it turns off. That'll be $1,000.
But you get obsessed with it. You know, what was funny was that I was at CES last year, and of course I walked up to, like, it was like Whirlpool, and they were showing this crazy high-tech washer and dryer, and I was like, can I control it with my iPhone? And she's like, next year.
So you're like, I am interested.
I thought I was throwing her a curve, and turned out not so much.
Well, Sony is entering a ebook market, not crowded enough, apparently. Sony wants us to have access to books that we use Sony to purchase them through the new Reader app. Andy, you were mentioning that you read a lot on tablets. Is this more compelling to you than any other ebook reading app that you might already know and love?
Not really. I mean,
have to do it, huh?
Yeah, it's publishers are offering licensing terms just about anybody because their model is to sell it to. They don't like exclusivity. They don't like giving one distributor a whole lot of power. So this is very, very much in the wheelhouse of every conventional publisher and every conventional packager. But as far as the consumers go, really, there's the Kindle app. There's the iBooks app, which has an advantage over Kindle in that it's preloaded. You're instantly asked to download it, and it's sort of intimately connected to the iTunes store. And then any other store kind of has trouble getting traction. I mean, I myself was a little bit of a Kindle bigot up until about 8 months to a year ago when Google revamped their Play Store and started to tell people, hey, look how much content we have available for you. Really, almost every book you could name that you would be interested in getting from Amazon or iBooks is also available through Google Play. And this is, as a matter of fact, the most open format you can possibly get. Google Play, all their content is DRM'd for their commercial books, as you know, that's the plague you're not going to get rid of. But they do use an Adobe format that is at least platform agnostic. So you can buy reader apps that work with Adobe's DRM and move it from device to device to device. So you can put on your iPad, put on almost anything except for a Kindle. But are people really aware of it? So I did get that press release. I did start looking at it when I got that information. And what I wound up with at the end of the day was, why am I going to recommend people to go to the store they've never heard of when they have these two stores that are absolutely in your face and you know are still going to be in business in 2 or 3 years' time?
I guess if you already had a Sony e-ink reader and, maybe you got it as a gift. Who knows? Or that's just whatever you had.
You have a very well-intentioned but not very tech-savvy aunt.
Who
knows you like iPads and they bought you right.
At least I could read my books on my iPhone or something. Yes. Alex, Renee, any interest in the Sony Reader app for iOS?
I'm just not interested in text. So,
you're not interested in words?
I read stuff in small amounts like Flipboard, that's about the most reading I do. But if I'm gonna read a long book, I'm gonna listen to it, or I'm gonna want something more interactive. I think that all these reading formats are fine. I just think that they are going to slowly fade away.
Well,
the thing that I found interesting is Andy said that,
See, I was waiting for Andy. That was a bait, Andy. I was just baiting you.
Thank you for the setup, because I'm just trying to figure out when exactly was the epoch of the written word. Was that like 4,000 words years ago? Was it 8,000 words ago? But suddenly we had the iPad. So... Sorry, man.
I don't think it's the iPad. I think the idea of unitasking, information, I think is something that, it'll survive this century.
You're very bearish on the concept of focusing on anything. You don't feel as though focusing on your attention on something is a growth industry.
And not only am I ADD, I am defiantly ADD. See, that's the whole thing. I make fun of unitaskers.
Well, now they have those two competing apps, at least in the App Store, that are designed for people who do not want to read several versions of a story. Right. So, Alex, you're the perfect.
They don't want to read several versions of the story?
No, because who's got the time, right? You want some sort of succinct, give me my little blurb. I want the information. So
now, what's interesting about me is that I'm the exact opposite of that. Because okay. What I want All to right. see is if there's a piece of news, I want to see what CNN, Al Jazeera, Fox News, like I want to see what all of them have Everybody. To say about the same thing so that I can triangulate what is actually might actually be occurring.
You just want everyone to say it in very few words.
Yeah, I just want them to be. I want them to be succinct, but you know, from like you open up something in Flipboard, you see 21 pages. You're like, I'm not going to read that. That's on my iPhone. On my iPhone, it'll be 21 pages, and I'll be like, no, it really needs to be eight pages on an iPhone on Flipboard is pretty much my limit.
See, I mean, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. It's not a symphony. It's not a bad symphony, but you know what? You really could get that down to about 18 seconds because a lot of it just repeats itself, doesn't it?
You just had more time. Wasn't there something for that movie? You just have too many notes. There's just too many notes. Yes,
too many notes.
That's there absurd.
There it is.
One thing I find interesting about what Andy was saying about Sony is that Amazon often touts the number of exclusive titles they have, like 150,000. Titles as a competitive advantage for their ebook reader. And I wonder if someone like Sony would have to have really hot, really exclusive, almost like platform exclusives in the video game era to try to swing some momentum their way. I know, for example, I bought Planet Hulk on iBooks, but I had to buy Dark Knight on Kindle because they just didn't have it there. And that's the only reason why I have more than one book app right now. So unless there's a compelling content reason to go to Sony, I don't see them going very far at all.
There is a lot of fudge in that number because when they say the number of titles that are exclusive to Kindle, they're not talking about a New York Times bestseller. They're talking about some English lit major's unfinished grad student thesis project that they said, oh, you mean that I can, by downloading this free app, I can turn this 800-page monstrosity into a book on the store and I can get money for it? Great. So,
all right. Well, we've got some picks of the week. Renee, are you also a weekly picker? I know you're.
Yes.
Oh, good. So we'll have some picks. We do have one more break to take, so everybody could just have a little water and kind of regain their strength. And for that, we will kick it over to Leo Laporte.
All right. I know you want the new iPad mini. That's pretty sweet. Maybe you want a new iPad. Take that iPad 3 and send it back and get the new iPad. The problem with keeping up to date in gadgets is the great cost. That's why I really love Gazelle.com. If you use Gazelle, we've certainly talked about it enough. This is the place where you can go to sell your used gadgets, get cash to buy the newest, latest, and greatest. You know, Gazelle used to do a bunch of different products. They realized this is what people really want. iPhone, iPad, iPod, MacBook, iMac, or Mac Mini or iMac or MacBook Pro. And they do take cell phones, the old BlackBerry RIM or HTC, LG, Motorola, or Nokia. Let's say you've got a Samsung unlocked Galaxy S3, which I happen to have lying around the house, and I'd like to get rid of it. It's in great condition. Now, I could just throw it away, or I could just more likely throw it in a drawer, and this way I get cash for it so I can buy it, throw it in the box. Let's take a look at an iPhone. Maybe you want to get the new iPad. That was the example I used. You've got your third generation iPad. And you say, I'm ready to trade this in. $495. Wow. Now throw that in the box. You go through all your old stuff. They pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. And you get new stuff or cash if you want. Here's what happens. Their specialists will remove your data from it. You don't have to worry about that. And then they will send you either a check, a PayPal credit, or, and this is the pro tip, if you buy a lot of stuff from Amazon, get that Amazon gift card because there's an additional 5% added to it. So that's a really good deal. Gazelle, gazelle.com. When it's time to move on and get the newest gadget, don't fill up the landfill. Don't throw it in a drawer. Go to Gazelle. Pass it along. Recycle the easy way. Gazelle.com.
Thanks, Leo. Hey, so we're at the picks of the week's part of the show, and I have mine. I'm very excited. Do we ever go in a particular order? Renee, do you want to go first? Or do you want to go last?
I'm good to go.
Okay, all right. We're starting on the edge. Renee Ritchie, what is your weekly Mac Break pick?
My pick of the week, and I have to confess up front that it's made by a friend of mine, so I'm a little bit biased, but it's a fantastic app. It's the new iStat 2 for iOS. It's made by Bajango, who did iStat Menu and the old iStat Dashboard widget, and they've just completely updated their app. So the idea is it can tell you everything that's going on with your phone, with your iPhone, your iPad, but you can also run the iStat server app on your Mac or Windows, and there's even an open source Linux version. So you can be sitting by the poolside, umbrella drink in hand, keeping an eye on all your computers back in the server room, and you know whether you have to worry about them or not. I use them for my Mac Pro in my other room, and I use it for my MacBook Pro if I'm not there, and it's a very nerdy, very geeky, very IT administrator kind of app, but it's a phenomenal amount of detail. You can tap on a lot of stuff and get even more information about it. And on the Mac, you can even go back 6 months or a year and give you all the stats for your machine. So I've been using it quite a lot in the last week.
$4.99. Renee Ritchie loves it. iStat 2 is the name for iPhone and iPad. Correct.
And iPad mini now, too.
And iPad mini as well, because, of course, anything you can do on a big old heavy iPad, you can do on the mini as well. Alex Lindsay, do you have a pick of the week?
One thing to say about iStat is it's probably one of the first apps that I install on any new machine that I have that I'm working on is iStat Menu, is because I need to know what's going on. So iStat Menu is also a great one in that family. So as far as my recommendation, so as many people may have guessed, I travel a lot. And as a result, I have become very, very sensitive to bags. So I thought, you know, that hold my Mac stuff. And so I just got a new bag. For a long time, I was using a Kata 467i, and they redesigned it in a way that I did not appreciate. So first, I bought a whole bunch of their old ones so that we wouldn't run out of them because we stock up stuff. And then I finally found another one. I was at REI over the last couple of days. And I found this bag. It's very much like it. This is a Mountain Smith bag, and it's, I think, their camera. I can't remember the name of it. Camera Vintage or something like that. But anyway, so it's a. But this is made by Mountain Smith, which I wouldn't expect. I wouldn't usually get a bag from Mountain Smith. I mean, for cameras or whatever, I'd get it for hiking or something like that. Very much similar to the 467, where you've got three little compartments down here. I put all kinds of cameras and video stuff down here. It's great bag. Great pocket selection. So you have a nice little area up front here that I can put things like my Wi-Fi card, but also a nice water-protected area here, as well as some areas where I keep little batteries that no longer will work with my iPhone 5 soon, which would be a big bummer. But nice big open container, and I'll talk about that in a second, but this is a big open container. You can put a lot of stuff in. You can really create a big mess this way, but I'll show you how we fix that. And then also, they've got two laptop. It's actually got a little separator in the center, so you can have two laptops, which I normally have. So it's a great bag. It's about $120. There you go. And it is it actually is bigger than this 467 internally, I think, which makes it a little harder to get under the seat. You have to kick it a little harder when you push it under the seat, but it's a great bag there. Now, that big area on the top is also a problem because if you start putting cables in there, you'll never find anything because it's too big. You got to always figure out a way to subdivide your big space. I know that I'm getting a little crazy about the packing stuff. But anyway, so turns out Container Store makes these little guys here. Now, these are for the guys. You'll never find these because these are cosmetic bags.
I was going to say, you know, that looks curiously like what I put my makeup brushes into.
It is. But let me tell you, they are so useful when it comes to putting cables in the right order. So these are micro mesh bags, and you can see what's in them. You can see what kind of trouble you're getting yourself into without actually having to, you know, dig through them. So anything that's opaque is really not your friend because you can't figure out what you actually pack. Like, so for instance, you know, I speak a lot, and so these are like every adapter that I could possibly need to connect to a projector. So I've got one little bag that just does that, you know, and then this is just general data cables and stuff like that. So I have a kind of a host of these little guys here, and they're micro mesh bags. They're super cheap. They're like $6, $7. They're at the Container Store. I don't know if you can order, I think you have to order them online from the Container Store. I think the Container Store makes them, or, well, some Chinese company makes them and Container Store sells them. But they're little metal bags, and they're really great, and I like them a lot. But they, yeah, they're cosmetic bags, so if you know, you have to get over that if you're a guy. Well, some guys. Anyway, but they're really the bomb when it comes to you know, keeping track of all your stuff and making sure that you're not going through the airport looking like an idiot.
That's so, a great tip. $6 or $7 too. I mean, I haven't looked lately, but I mean, a variety of drugstores. I mean, the Walgreens down the street from me has stuff that's like that. Maybe not as nice of quality, but probably is only a couple of dollars. So that's really good for cable management. Certainly device management too.
That's it.
Thanks, Alex. Andy, let's kick it over to you. Do you have a pick?
Yes, I do. I've always been disappointed with the design of the iPhone's built-in music player app, because it's functional, it works, but it just doesn't look like this product of a company that designed the iPod. It's just very, very, there's not much to it. It's not, it doesn't do its job really, really very well. It does it okay, but it doesn't do it very well. This is an app, but I've just found an app called Track 8 by Ender Labs. It's on the iTunes store for $1.99. That does nothing more complicated. Dang, why is this pixelated again? Hang on. Ay, gewalt. That does nothing more complicated than simply bring like the Windows Phone Metro style music player to iOS, and everything you got here, everything you get in Metro is right here. So you get this like side scrolling, really cool interface. I've got it up here. So you can by swiping left to right, go through all your different categories here. Here is my most played music. And you can scroll up and down and see all the album art of the albums I'm listening to. So here's Diana Damrau. I can tap that. And now I'm looking at a scrolling list. And hey, look at that. It understands that sometimes music album and track titles are too wide. And so we'll just simply scroll them automatically. And so if I just tap one, and now I'm looking at this really pretty music player. So I just found this fairly recently. And unfortunately, it's now completely displaced the built-in music player app because it does pretty much everything that the existing music player does. You can't create new playlists with it, unfortunately. But as far as just as a playback mechanism, much prettier, much tidier, much easier to navigate through, I think. And another example of, oh, Apple, please, 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 please steal some ideas from here, or at least use that as encouragement to rethink how you've got your music player app working. Because, I mean, look at that. It's so easy to find what you're looking for. And there's no reason why you can't develop an app that isn't both effective and also has a little bit of style to it, right? Instead of just these stupid these simple vertically scrolling lists of plain text that really doesn't help you discover the music that you have. So, yeah, that's exactly what I did, at least on my iPhone. I kind of replaced the standard player with this.
I love it. I think it looks great. I actually showed this to Leo an iPad version sometime back. Or maybe it was the iPhone version. It was blown up. I don't remember if it's universal or not. And he goes, yeah, but who's going to want something that looks like Metro on an iDevice? And I was like, I don't think anybody has a problem with that, do they? I mean, right. As long as your music looks nicer.
If nothing else, it'll give you an idea of why so many people are kind of excited about what the Windows 8 interfaces, the Metro interfaces like, or what they're now calling the modern interfaces like. You can see that's a very flexible way of putting a lot of information on a tiny screen, and it's pretty, it's functional, it's fast, and it's very, very flexible. So I like it a lot.
$1.99. All right, well, we've come to my tip. My tip is, I guess it's sort of how to have fun if you want to play a really fun little game. And this actually comes from, it's the very first iOS app out of Amazon's Amazon Game Studios. I think that's the name of it. Developed with another company. But Amazon is putting games into the App Store. This is called Air Patriots. I've actually already talked about this on i5 for the iPhone this week. But it's really fun. And it's not hard to play, so I figure it would appeal to a lot of folks. And I'll just try to turn on the volume as much as possible, but it's not so necessary for you to listen to it. What's more important is how the strategy works. And what's cool is that it is pretty much drag and place your planes in a variety of places around our battlefield here so that they fly directly over the tanks below and blow them up. That is pretty much it. Ooh, I even have audio here. This is going to be really loud, probably. I'm still trying to remember that I have my audio jack on the bottom of the iPhone. So I am flying all over the place here. I've got a couple different planes because I've leveled up. You start off with just one plane, and the tanks are going by really slowly, and you sort of think, gosh, this is almost like a game for babies. It's not hard at all. But of course, it gets a lot more complicated. You have a variety of different weapons. You have a certain amount of lifeline that you need to take into consideration or you will lose. And the tanks keep coming. Some of them have little shields so that they won't just they won't just blow up once. You know, you got to go over them a few times. What's confusing and a little frustrating about these planes is that they don't go that fast. So you are sort of you're sort of navigating around your battlefield and trying to stay on course, but it's almost like a it's like a game of centipede, right? It's like the tanks start coming and there's too many of them and they're too low, and how are you ever going to get through it? So I'm on some pro level that I can't seem to get past now, but I figure for most folks, I'm not a huge gamer. I play games and I get frustrated and I don't want to play them anymore. And I'm kind of into this right now, and it's free, so it doesn't cost you a dime, which is also nice. So the next time you're trying to waste some time at the airport or something like that, and you want to, you know, give Amazon Game Studios a try and see how their game looks. And by the way, it's really nice. It's kind of hard to tell that this is, you know, this beautiful optimized for Retina thing. See, look at all these tanks. Oh, I'm so screwed. I'm not going to be around much longer. This is a good pick. So that's Air Patriots again from Amazon Game Studios. Probably the first of many Amazon games. We'll see if it stays popular. I know it's popular now. any of you guys played this before, or is it just me?
Never.
No.
Have not.
No. Well, I guess I'm the only one who knows how to have fun around here. That's fine, too.
Maybe the only one who likes to glorify war.
That's right. Yeah, shoot 'em up. Not for
how
everybody.
How about a game in which you heal the planet instead of try to destroy it?
But I'm destroying the bad guys. Come on. I'm a good plane. I'm a happy plane.
Even the bad guys have mothers.
That's, well. What if the tanks the tanks could be driven by robots? We don't know. What's happening down there?
Oh, great. So devices that are programmed just to kill without remorse. Why don't you just stop digging your own little pit here?
Did you notice in Field Runners too, how much energy they spent making sure that you're clear that what you're killing are clones and not individual Field Runners? It was not clear in the first one. In the new one, it's very, very clear.
No non-clones were harmed in the making of this game.
Exactly.
My time is still taken up with letterpress. I haven't had any time for new games yet. That thing is just controlling my soul.
Well, you know, Renee, I should say, Renee and I are Game Center friends. We are playing. Are we still playing the game?
Yes.
See, we're almost at like a weird chess stalemate thing going on here right now, because Renee is very good at letterpress and he's figured out a way to corner me, and he knows that if I just make one little move, I open the door for him to finish the game.
But I can't finish you. You're spry enough to stay out of the way.
You can't, exactly. It's like, I'm not going to beat you. I just keep dodging your bullets. So
but is
the
it
game
Rocky 1 or is it
forever.
Rocky 2? We don't know.
Oh, gosh, it's very, very addicting. Letterpress probably should have been my pick, but I'm sure you guys have talked about that to death on previous episodes. But hey, speaking of this episode, we've gone almost 2 hours, so I guess it's time to wrap up this episode.
Keep those pledges coming in
for
an hour two of the
Yeah, this was nice. What were we? Episode 324 of Mac Break Weekly. What is it that Leo says? Who wants to... play the Leo.
Mac Break is over. Get back to work, you gold bricks.
Oh, gold bricks? Or old
bricks?
Gold bricks.
Layabouts.
Rawr.
Drains on the company resources. Well, you know, you got a review coming up in 3 weeks. I wouldn't be leaning on that shovel if I was you. We're going to make some changes around here.
I should probably say goodbye to all of my co-hosts. Andy Nocco, thank you so much for joining us as always weekly. What's happening in your world this week? Anything exciting before we see you next week?
Oh, God, a whole bunch of reviews got backed up from the hurricane. So you're going to see the iPad review, you're going to the iPad Mini and the iPad 4 review, the last part of my Microsoft Surface review, and maybe another piece about what's happening in the world of digital comics.
Ooh, very good. Alex Lindsay, what did I call you at the beginning of the show? The senior best person at PixelCorp ever? Boss man?
I thought it was a little, you know, over the top, but I enjoyed it.
Good. I'm glad. You're traveling in Houston now? Are you coming back to the Bay anytime soon?
I'm actually back tomorrow for the day, and then I'm in New York on Thursday, and then I will be in Tel Aviv over the weekend. So I might try to do a tweet up if I have enough time. So if you're in Tel Aviv, let me know. So hopefully if all goes well, I'll actually be coming into MacBreak next week from Tel Aviv.
Wonderful.
Then I'll be back in New York, and then eventually I'll find my way back to San Francisco.
All right. Well, Godspeed out there. Renee Ritchie, thanks so much for joining us. Renee from iMore, the editor over there, who they're always breaking news. They've always got the best sources. What's the breaking news this week that we haven't read yet?
For Apple, the Scott Forstall stuff we've read, but now it's the time off. What they're planning for the spring of next year, what's going to be the big thing before WWDC.
Cool. All right, so this is me. Okay, another MacBreak Weekly is in the can. Now that you've had your break, get back to work. You had gold bricks.